From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we're looking back at the best moments from our game, Not My Job. Now, when Wait, Wait first went on the air, we featured other NPR personalities in our Not My Job game, mostly because if they didn't agree, we could go over to their cubicles and pester them. It was fun, but after a couple of years, we actually ran out of NPR personalities to come on the show, unless you count Dan Shore, who still will not answer our phone calls. So eventually, we had to move on to people who did less important things than work in public radio. For example, in early 2006, we got in touch with an actor who was interested in coming on the show to promote a film called The Da Vinci Code. He appeared in our show in May 2006. Now, you may know this week's guest from his remarkable performance in the TV movie Mazes and Monsters back in 1982. Or maybe that hilarious and underappreciated 80s sitcom Bosom Buddies. Oh, we have some fans.
Maybe
you know him because he is starring in the biggest movie of the year, and every bus shelter and blank building wall in America right now has his face plastered all over them. Tom Hanks, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So we understand you have a movie coming out.
Well, as the studio would like to make it so that no one in the world is unaware of that fact.
Here's what I wonder. Did you deal directly with Satan, or did his people talk to your people?
This is interesting. I wanted to ask you about this. There's been a huge reaction to the film of The Da Vinci Code because of its purportedly anti-Catholic, anti-church message. I mean, there are a lot of people talking about, you know, maybe, you know, responding to this movie. How do you feel about this? This didn't happen to Big, I can't help but notice. I mean, is this a new experience for you?
It's not exactly a surprise. We, oddly enough, contrary to what you may think there in Chase Auditorium, we actually did read the book before we decided.
And you did the movie anyway. I think
and
that's
we did
great.
The movie anyway, and we condensed some things and we changed it around. Film is controversial at times. And quite frankly, I'm surprised the Vatican never banned Bachelor Party when it came. I view this as they're late to the game.
A lot of this is really just a backlash from their remaining silent on Toy Story 2.
Although it turns out, and this explained a mystery for me, Turner and Hooch, a personal favorite of John Paul II.
They have a lot of bachelor parties
like
in the Vatican.
You'll walk through the Hall of Shame here.
Yeah.
No, not with Toy Story 2.
That's true.
That was a gem. No,
it was a gem. It would take 1,000 Turner and Hooches to offset the power of... I love Woody.
Tim Allen, who, of course, is the voice of Buzz Lightyear, he and I saw the finished product together of Toy Story 2, and after... Jesse sings the I'm a Lost Cowboy Doll song, and she ended up in a box on the side of the road.
When Somebody Love Me, that song uses me to tears.
Two grown men looking at each other across a couple of empty rows in a screening room, tears in our eyes. This is pretty good. Yeah, no, that was a good sequence.
One of the reasons that this controversy over the movie is a little surprising to me is because, well, frankly, you're in it. And everybody knows that you're the nicest guy in Hollywood and would never mean anybody harm. I mean, that's your image, certainly. I mean, we've read that about, I mean, I think the cover of Esquire, the only good man in Hollywood.
A lot of times that's what people say, just as the patrol cars are leaving the neighborhood.
Yeah.
He was such a nice guy.
That dungeon in the basement comes as such a shock.
He was always so nice to Meg Ryan. I don't understand this. But I was wondering, does that image ever get in your way? Do you ever like, I would get up and dance naked on that table right now if I wasn't the nicest guy in Hollywood?
Well, when presented with scripts where I do dance naked on the tops of tables, I have one simple credo. I don't do horror movies. That would just be, you want to talk, that would be, the UN would ban it.
Let alone the Vatican.
That would.
But that leads me to my another question, which is you generally, there have been some exceptions, play good guys. Do you ever, since presumably you would have your choice of projects, do you ever want to just break out and play an absolutely stone-cold, evil kind of character, somebody who'd get killed at the end and you'd have to be happy for that because he was so bad? Do you ever want to do that one?
Well, I made a film in Chicago called Road to Perdition in which I counted up the people that I killed. They are applauding... I hope the city of Chicago.
Yes, they are. although I think there are some people here who think the fat guy at the desk deserved it, but that's another question.
In which I believe I assassinated, like, into the double digits. I lost count at 13 or 14.
But they had it coming. Come
yeah,
on.
You did it in a kind of likable way.
Well, let me tell you. You can't stop the charm monster from coming. No matter how mad you get, it's,
you know,
a man's got to do what a man's.
You know,
man's got to exude what a man's got to exude.
I have to say, I like that movie, and it was interesting to see you massacre a room full of people with a machine gun, to take an example. And I thought that was an approach you could have taken in some other movies that you've done. When Meg Ryan first comes to complain to you and you've got mail, for example, I mean, that would be a scene.
Now, you're taking the position that I should have machine gunned death Meg Ryan. Now,
yeah, that's quite a stand there, Peter.
For people that would disagree.
It would have been a surprise.
And you've got mail. I could have sent her a poison pen email.
That's true.
That's about as bad as it was going to get in that relationship.
I understand. Before we play this game, I wanted to ask you about something that you mentioned to me earlier, which is that, and this surprised me, again, having to go to your nice guy image. You're very competitive.
Well, when it comes to games, yes, I must say. I blame my siblings when I was younger.
Really? So you're a cutthroat guy.
Well, I don't. In my family, if you lose, you are ridiculed for losing. You're literally called things like "loser drooly head." You lost. Have drool in your head. And it's much better to be the ridiculer than the ridiculee. So ever since that, I've been scarred over games of say, Animal Twister. I refuse to lose. Speaking I refuse, damn it.
I always wondered what the source of your rage was, Tom Hanks, and now we know.
Speaking of drooly head, I liked Turner and Hooch. Except that dog did slobber a lot, didn't he?
That dear dog. I love that dog.
Yeah, okay.
I know, he's a good dog. We got along well. You know, when you make a movie with a dog, you have to work with the dog for weeks prior to shooting it. Otherwise, he won't take his eye off the trainer. So I would go off and play with the, I think, actually three dogs that portrayed Turner and Hooch. It was a part too big for one dog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you had to go and, like, hang out on a regular basis with a dog preparing to do this film.
I had to go and wrestle with the dogs and play with the dogs.
That couldn't have been easy given your competitive streak.
Anyway, I was interested in your competitive streak because, Tom Hanks, we have invited you here to play a game, and we are going to call it...
You're the meanest, cruelest, nastiest, drunkest lout in Hollywood.
As the first time anybody's ever said that to you, which is why we wanted to do it. Now, as we've been going on about, you do have this reputation as the nicest guy in the film business. So, in keeping with the theme of the game, things you don't presumably know anything about,
all right.
We're going to ask you three questions about some actors who had the opposite reputation.
Ooh.
Answer two of these three questions about some of the film colony's legendary bad boys. You will win our prize for our listener, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine.
I pray they are no longer with us.
Yes. We actually
They are stars in the firmament.
They are. Okay. They have ascended to the actual constellations because we know you might have to work with these people. So that's fine. All right. Carl, who is Tom Hanks playing for?
Peter, Tom is playing for Ellen Heiniger of Springfield, Vermont.
Ah.
All right. Ready to go? Are you focused?
Let's go.
All right. First up, Marlon Brando. Mm-hmm. His appetite, of course, was uncontrollable, so much so that he caused the 1962 remake of Mutiny on the Bounty to go way over budget. How? A, he demanded that they hire a personal assistant just to dip all his fresh fruit in melted chocolate. B, he ate so much on the set that he split 52 pairs of pants. Or C, he insisted that Paramount reserve every table at the nearby Nicodel restaurant all day, every day, in case he got a little peckish.
I'm going to say C, the Nicodels.
No, I'm afraid it was the pants.
Ah. Yeah.
Wow.
52.
52.
Can I just say one thing?
You may.
Damn you to hell.
Well, that's fair, but at least he's not a drooly head.
No, I'm really conflicted. I'm conflicted right now. That's like the meanest thing anyone's ever said to me. And it was said to me by Tom Hanks. How do I react? Where do I go with that?
I think the appropriate response is, oh, pshaw.
Pshaw, Tom.
So is the pants.
Yeah.
The number 52 has got to be a scurrilous rumor.
No, the number comes, at least as far as we could track it down, from the costume designer on the film. He ate hugely. He misbehaved terribly. Mutiny on the Bounty, as you might know, became the Heaven's Gate of its day. It went wildly over budget, took much longer to shoot than it should have. And interestingly, Brando got paid extra for every extra day of filming, which was made necessary by his bad behavior. So for him, it was a win-win.
Mm.
Mm. Something you might consider, sir.
I'm writing it down.
Yes.
But it seems like the costume designer could have made a bigger pair of pants.
You
yeah.
think?
Yeah.
Well, it was a costume.
At some point, you got to call an audible and get bigger pants.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The term Sansabelt comes to my mind.
And by the way, yeah. he's still quite riveting in Mutiny on a Bounty. You can't take your...
Oh, yeah.
That is
yeah.
true.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're not going to be able to focus, though, because everybody's going to be waiting for his pants to go in every scene.
I think whenever the camera pans upward to the palm tree, you know what's happened.
That may ruin the movie viewing. Yeah.
That's
we're
going
to watch it really loud so we can hear the tearing.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. You can get these next two, and you'll still win, and no, you know, and that's great.
Yes.
Next question. Errol Flynn, famous womanizer, was married three times. Now, his third wife, at least, had to know what she was in for, because he met her how? Was it A, she was selling refreshments in the courthouse where he was being tried for statutory rape? B, she was the nurse who was working in the ER the night he came in with, shall we say, a social disease complaint? Or see, one night he landed in her gardenias after he got drunk and fell out of a second-story window.
These are all so reminiscent of my wooing of Rita. That
yes.
Which, oddly enough, has never come up, say, doing Letterman.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But... Now, do they sell refreshments at a courthouse?
Apparently they do. A little snack bar, I can
yes.
see that.
Yes. Based on that alone, I'm going with the refreshments at the courthouse.
You're right, Tom. Yay. That's exactly what happened. This, of course, was the trial of the century of 1942, Errol Flynn being tried for statutory rape. He was acquitted, by the way, which led to the universal adoption of the phrase, in like Flynn.
Ah.
That's where it comes from.
Oh.
So this is very exciting. If you get this last one correct.
This is the rubber match. So
as it were.
I think good job drooly head will come from tonight.
Richard Burton. One of Hollywood's greatest drinkers.
Yes.
He said he worked drunk all the time, except in one rare situation. He would never show up drunk if he had to do what? A, kiss a particularly attractive actress because he didn't want to miss anything. B, do a nude scene because, quote, liquor has the same effect on little Richard as a cold bath, unquote. Or C, act drunk because, quote, I didn't know how to play drunks when I was drunk.
Wow. I'm going to go with C. That sounds, has a ring of air of authenticity to it. He could not fake being drunk when he was actually drunk. I'm going to say C.
Well, given what we've seen of your anger, I say this with some relief. You're right, sir. Ooh. Yes.
Oh, you know what I get to do?
What do you get to do?
I get to bottle up all that rage.
Save it for next.
Keep it inside for another week.
Keep it hidden, you know. If you keep it hidden long enough, you might win another Academy Award before people find out.
Hanks well, yeah. like Hanks.
No, he. Burton says that he was drunk all the time. In fact, when he was doing Camelot on Broadway, they say that he drank a bottle of vodka for each performance, including two on matinee days. And he was still pretty good.
Well, I heard of that. My famous story might be connected to him, that he was in one of those Shakespeare's where there's like a Duke of Sheffield and a Duke of Bolingbroke and what have you, and he was playing Sheffield. And he stumbled on stage drunk after an intermission and collapsed. And the audience laughed uproariously. And he stood up and said, "If you think I'm pissed, wait till you see the Duke of Bolingbroke." Which, you know, and, you know, you can't beat that English stage training. You
right. No, no. Carl, how did Tom Hanks do in our show?
Tom did very well, Peter. He had two correct answers. So, Tom, you win our prize for Ellen Heiniger of Springfield, Vermont.
Ellen.
Carl, I think
now,
you did.
Can you imagine how angry Ellen would have been?
Yeah. I think Carl did very well by saying you did very well as opposed to just well, because one thing we've learned about you, we don't want to set you off.
Well, you know, I'm gonna wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking, what was the first one I missed?
You missed the one about how many what Marlon Brando did.
Pants.
Yes, exactly.
Hang that. From now on, you've ruined every Marlon Brando movie for me. Well, you're watching On the Waterfront or Streetcar Named Desire. Oh, there he is, Mr. 52 Pants.
If you're really competitive, you'll go for 53 in your next case.
He'll rip that T-shirt off yelling Stella, and I say, oh, the T-shirt can go. And the pants. God bless Marlon Brando.
Tom Hanks is one of Hollywood's leading men, the winner of two Oscars for Best Actor. He's the star of The Da Vinci Code, which opens all over this world of ours.
Whether you like it or not.
It's coming. Tom Hanks, thank you so much for being with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Hanks. Coming up, the questioner becomes the questioned when Terry Gross appears in our show. And the man who answered thousands of Jeopardy questions correctly, Ken Jennings, joined us for a Not My Job specially formulated to trip him up.